Hello, and thank you for tuning in to another episode of CPA Review and More. We are pleased to bring you the number one podcast for CPAs and CPA candidates. If you'd like to learn more about how Yeager CPA Review can help you, find us on our website at YeagerCPAReview.com. Now, here's your host, Phil Yeager.
Hello, everyone. This is Phil Yeager, and welcome to my podcast, CPA Review and More. We usually talk about some CPA review topics, but you can only talk about that so much. So we try to bring more here. And that's what we have today. We have a person who's going to talk about her practice, what she does, all right, how she got started, whether she really wanted to be a CPA or not, or, all right, now that she's thinking about it, maybe she wanted to be a doctor. Who knows? All right. But we'll find that out. All right. Our guest today is Liz. You know what, Liz? Let me spell your last name for me.
M-A-S-O-N.
M-A-S-O-N. Okay. Boy, that's easy.
Yep. The easiest one you got.
Yes. Liz is a graduate of University of Nevada at Reno, USA. And
yes,
also
sir.
In Arizona. And let me ask you, all right, how long ago did you, your initial thought was to major in accounting? Is that what you wanted to do?
So that's a great question. I actually grew up in a family of accountants, and so I wanted to do anything other than accounting. And then I got into school and I knew I wanted to do business, and I started taking classes, and the accounting classes were easy, mostly because I was taught it as a kid. And so me being me, ambition is deep in my veins. And I said, well, if I do accounting, I can graduate in 3 years. So I did that.
How did you do accounting before even going into it? What did you sit around the kitchen table, dining room table, and discuss debits and credits? What did you do?
That's actually quite accurate. My dad was a professor. Yeah.
I'm a visionary, I can tell.
Yeah. Yeah. So my dad went back to get his PhD when I was in middle school, and part of his PhD program was teaching basic accounting classes. And well, I was kind of an unruly child. So my punishments were having to take final examinations at a college level. And if I got a B or better, I was ungrounded. And those, you know, college examinations included financial accounting, managerial accounting, tax, whatever he was teaching that semester. And so that started when I was about 12 and went until I was about 15. And so, yeah, I learned accounting quite early. And then also, you know, when I started writing, my aunt would make me reconcile checkbooks for her clients because she is an accountant as well. So it was, you know, in the blood. And that's what I learned growing up.
Did you discuss anything else other than accounting when you were together, or is it just accounting?
Yeah, no, we had lots of interesting conversations. My mom is a pastry chef, so that was a very different conversation around the dinner table. And it was a lot of fun for me, just getting to learn from my parents and the rest of my family as well. So
what is your mother? Does your mother have her own bakery, or is she?
She did, actually. She did specialty catering when I was a kid, and she worked at some really prominent restaurants in New York when I was a child. And then she ended up closing down her bakery, moving when my dad moved to Nevada, and she became a ski instructor and has been doing that for the last 22 years now.
In Nevada?
Where in Tahoe. Yeah.
Tahoe. Okay. I've never been to Tahoe.
It's beautiful. Highly recommend it.
Oh, let me in there because I'm from New York originally.
Well, right. Me too.
Where'd you grow up? Where in New York?
On the Upper West Side.
Upper West Side. Very nice. And I wasn't in the Upper West Side. I grew up on Long Island.
Okay.
Have you heard of that?
Absolutely.
That would be slum district, as we call it.
Not at all. It's beautiful on Long Island.
Yeah. No, it's, I tell people I really enjoyed Long Island growing up there. At that time, it was really the suburbs. Mm-hmm. And it was really great place to grow up, except that today, once again, a check mark against New York. Did you hear about what went on?
I did not.
Did you hear that?
Oh, there was a shooting in Brooklyn, right?
Yes.
Yeah,
that's terrible. You know, New York had problems in the 70s, but mm-hmm. they cleaned the place up, and now we're getting back to the same thing.
Yeah.
And we're supposed to go into New York next week. So I have to decide, should I take three AK-47s or
I'm gonna go with no. That's probably a bad idea to enter New York City with automatic weapons. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, but that's a good workout, carrying them around, right?
It is, but I'm not going to do it.
Yeah. No, I actually spend the month of July in New York every year. So
you do. And you go back. Now, who is there exactly? Your family?
So all of my extended family, and my sister lives in Brooklyn. And then everyone
Brooklyn
else is in the tri-state area. Oh, yeah, definitely. It's gentrified quite a bit.
Is there a reason you did not want to work in New York? Or what was your reason for staying where you are now?
Yeah, so I ended up moving to Phoenix with Grant Thornton in my early career, and I just loved it here. It's a great place to start a career. The cost of living is affordable. The weather is phenomenal. There's so much to do outside, and it was a great place to live. So I ended up staying.
I have never been to Tahoe.
You should go to Tahoe.
All I heard was last summer is the water levels are dropping. Is that true?
Yeah, I mean, anytime there's a drought, that tends to happen.
But probably when I think about it, now I'm not a gambler, all right? But I like to go to Vegas for about 3 days, all right? And, you know, I'm a big spender. I usually go to the penny and nickel machines, all right? And you know what? I do report the income. That's how honest I am, okay?
You report the losses to offset it?
No.
Well,
I don't want to be called in.
Actually started in casino audits and in tax around gaming. Yep.
Is that what Grant Thornton did in that area?
In the Reno, Nevada office when they had one. That's what I did there. So it was really interesting. Also phenomenally fun to audit casinos and learn about all the different odds on the tables and how they make money. It's just a really interesting area of accounting.
That is interesting. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because, and, you know, as a kid going into account room and seeing millions of dollars in person was, you know, pretty sexy.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the best I had was I worked on Wall Street for Seedman. They were called Seedman.
Okay.
Seedman.
Yep.
And because we were on Wall Street, Broad Street, a lot of their clients were banks.
Okay.
And the worst thing was during the summer, I'd have to go in there and count securities. Mm-hmm. Now, if that isn't more fun than anything I can think of, all right? But we had to be professional. We all wore three-piece suits to go sit in a vault, all right, and count securities.
Yeah.
And I thought to myself, maybe I picked the wrong profession. You know, it wasn't that exciting. But anyway, tell me this. You say in your LinkedIn, I guess it came from LinkedIn, all right, that you're an adventurer by night. Okay. All right. Is that going to be a TV show, by the way?
Maybe it should be. I'm quite good at taglines.
Tell us about Adventurer by Night. It sounds like
Marvel
comic series. Go ahead.
Well, let's start it. CPA by day, and then I take my glasses off and go on crazy adventures. No, I kid. But I tend to travel the world. So I love visiting new places and exploring new cultures and eating their food and learning how their economies work and just talking to the people. So I tend to spend a lot of time traveling and doing what I do in different places. And one of the reasons I built my firm completely in the cloud was so that I could do that. And so, you know, I've done things like I spent a month working from bullet trains in Japan. 1 year. I went to Europe and traveled all over and was still able to service all of my clients. I spend a frequent amount of time in Puerto Rico, go to Hawaii whenever I want. I've been to like 52 countries now and counting.
52
so,
countries.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yep. It's quite fun.
What's your favorite country?
See, I can't really answer that question because I would answer the next country that I go to, because to me, the exciting part is learning the new stuff and seeing the new cultures and experiencing it. But my mom gave me one amazing rule for travel, which is always leave one thing that you want to do undone so that you have a reason to return.
I did not travel until last 3 or 4 years.
Yeah.
And my wife was afraid to travel because she didn't speak their language. Mm-hmm. So 3-4 years ago, I said, you know, I'm not getting any younger. It's time to start traveling. Mm-hmm. And we went to Amsterdam. That was a beautiful city.
Beautiful.
And then we took a cruise to the Baltics.
Oh, okay.
There wouldn't be any cruises to the Baltics right now. But no, we went to St. Petersburg.
It's a beautiful city.
A lot of the countries that are involved in this war.
Yeah.
But next year, we were supposed to go to Greece. And then we got sick on the cruise.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It's not your fault. I won't hold it. No, my wife she got the flu, believe it or not.
Oh, God.
We go on the ship, terrible. 12 days, she gets the flu. And because she loves me so much, she shared it with me. I got the flu halfway through. But I haven't been away since the pandemic. Now, does the pandemic scare you in any way to travel?
I mean, I think from a global perspective, the pandemic is terrifying. We've had a ridiculous amount of loss of life, and that's really sad. I think from an economic perspective, it's also terrifying. The way that different governments have reacted and the people have reacted and businesses has reacted has created, you know, a different type of economy than we ever expected to be in this year. And so, you know, holistically, I think that it is a very big event that caused a lot of really scary things to happen. Now, from a travel perspective, all I can do is be as careful as I can, right? And so, you know, for me, I will still travel. I have been traveling. I've gone to Costa Rica in the last couple of months. I went to Puerto Rico again. You know, I'm not going to limit my life based on a fear, but I will be careful. And when I come back, I'm not going to go hang out with my grandmother. You know, I'll make sure that I'm good before I go see her because she's at risk, right? And I think that it's just being conscious of what you can do, right?
When you graduated school, did you go to Grant Thornton? Is that where you started?
Yes, sir. I started there at 19 years old as an intern.
Wow, you were young.
Yep.
No, you're still young. That sounded terrible.
I mean, I look younger than I am, but thank you.
Well, when you say you started 19, you were still in college, right?
Yep, I graduated right after my 21st birthday.
Very good. My birthday's coming up, by the way.
Well, happy early birthday.
April, thank you. April 24th.
Well, that's a great after-tax deadline.
It is. I can hardly, that's what I said on the schedule every year. No, it's, I don't know where the time went, but I wanted to ask you, you spoke about accounting, you know, your family is your father a professor?
He's a retired professor. He has a PhD in accounting and he also has his JD, but he spent about 20 years teaching at the University of Nevada, which is why I ended up going there.
And what does he do now? What does he do in retirement?
Yeah, he plays with the stock market quite a bit. He bugs the crap out of my sister and I. He watches our kids as much as possible because he loves his grandkids. And he has two daughters and 3 grandsons. So of course that makes him ecstatic. And you know, he's actually been trying to travel a bit more too and enjoy retirement.
Well, hopefully things will change a little, you know, and we get back to sort of some normalcy.
Yeah.
Did you always want to be an accountant because your family were accountants? Is that the reason?
No, actually I originally wanted to be in marketing. I thought, you know, that was pretty sexy, right? Marketing, you get to be creative, do some cool stuff, but it's also in the business world, which I felt very comfortable in. I do have entrepreneurs in my family as well as accountants. And that to me just felt very natural to go into the business world. But I took my first marketing class and the professor was not a very nice person. And also, you know, downgraded me for a color choice of a color I can't actually see. And when I went to him and explained this, he was like, that doesn't matter in marketing. You have to be better than that. And I was like, what? And so I just kind of had this moment of, I don't think I want to do marketing. And so then I started taking everything else. I took econ classes, I took finance classes, I took accounting classes. Econ, I absolutely loved. I was excellent at it, but the job prospects are go get a PhD and then be an analyst for the rest of your life. That didn't really sound fun. finance, the job prospects were go to work on Wall Street or sit in front of a spreadsheet for 20 hours a day. That also didn't sound fun. And so, you know, I thought kind of combining all of those skills, if I went into accounting, at least I could do client service, right? At least I could interact with the clients and have those types of conversations and be able to go to their sites and see how they do things and learn about that. And that to me was much more attractive. The field work side of it was. And so I said, okay, I'll get my undergrad in accounting. And I ended up doing a double major, accounting and finance, and then go to work for a firm and see what happens. And then I ended up working with Grant Thornton and their national tax group and went back for my master's in information systems because I really love technology. And I think if I was to do it all again, I probably would have started with a technology degree and then later learned the other avenues of what I would end up doing professionally.
The number of hours your firm makes you work during busy season, is it outrageous, or do they care about your quality of life?
Well, considering I founded the firm, I do whatever I want, which
you
means
founded
that
your firm.
Yes, sir.
Tell me about this. This is getting more interesting. Go ahead. How did that happen?
Yeah. So effectively, I was in big firms and I loved the people. I loved the clients. I thought some of the work was interesting. I hated the business practices. I really disliked the billable hour mentality to begin with. I thought that many of our team members were dehumanized, just billable hours. And that's all that was seen about them. I also didn't like the lack of innovation and the fact that people weren't utilizing the best technology that they could, right? And so all of these things were building up in me, and I am an actions person. I'm not a complainer. I do things. And so I utilized the tech in my job and got chastised for it. And at that moment, I said, you know what? Like, I can go do this myself. So I founded HighRock in, 2013, and then 2014, we registered as a CPA firm. And basically said, okay, I'm going to do everything in the cloud. It's all going to be advisory, consulting, outsourced accounting. Everything's going to be billed on a monthly basis. I am doing value pricing. I am ignoring the billable hour and utilizing all the technology that I want and making sure that it's as efficient as possible. And so, you know, that's where we started. And today we have about 40 people on our team all over the world.
Are you the managing partner of the firm?
I'm the CEO and founder.
You're very young. I mean that's silly.
Well, thank you.
You know, to accomplish everything, that's amazing. And you have 40 staff working, or?
Yep.
Well, you sound like you've actually accomplished quite a bit. Well, you have anything else you want to, what else do you want to do?
So there's a lot that I want to do. I think that when you start looking at what the future of our profession looks like, it no longer looks like the billable hour. It no longer looks like the audit review side of it. It no longer looks like a compliance business. What it looks like is a holistic understanding of business. And what it looks like is bringing technology and data and insights to businesses so that they can succeed. And what it looks like is actually changing the trajectory of our economy by supporting those businesses that don't have that type of experience to be able to make those high-level decisions, that don't have the information that we have, that we can find for them, that we can put together in meaningful ways for them. And so I think that the entire landscape of our profession is changing, and I will be a part of what that change looks like to push this profession into the future.
Number of people taking the exam has decreased quite a bit.
Yeah, because it's useless. And I mean that it's useless. I mean that in a meaning, like a lovingly way. I have my CPA. I think it's incredibly valuable. And I also think it's useless.
Why is it useless?
I do not need it to do what I do today. At all it does is add restrictions to my firm, restrictions to me as a human. It doesn't add value in the way that it could. Now, an underlying CPA, let's go back to history, right? So my grandfather was a CPA, a great CPA. He worked at giant firms, he worked at small businesses, he started his own practice, and he served his clients very well. And the CPA in his generation meant that it was regulated. It meant that he was tested and he knew what he was doing, and he was coming coming to the table with all of that information, but the test was geared only towards accounting knowledge and financial data, which at that moment was very important. Now, fast forward to today, you have people coming at the advisory side of business in so many different avenues. And if they don't understand the technology and they don't understand how to interpret data and information, their CPA is irrelevant, right? All it means is they can sign an audit report, right? And audit reports at this point have been commoditized. And so firms are seeing tiny profit margins on audit, big profit margins on consulting and advisory. Why would we continue to support a profession that's actually dying without any kind of innovation happening at the licensure level?
Why do you think that's happening? In fact, that brings me to actually the CPA evolution. I'm sure you're familiar with that. Mm-hmm. What's your feeling about that? Do you think it's going to increase the number of people?
I think it gives a platform for people to see value in the license again. And I also think that it's a good way to communicate it to the community, because the community doesn't understand, right? It used to be that a CPA was valued by the businesses because they understood what that meant. But today they have no idea what that means at all. And so when it comes to it, part of this is marketing. And I think the AICPA is trying to figure out how do you market the CPA license to the business community as a whole so that it brings that value and it garners that additional revenue or that additional trust and what is needed without overburdening and overregulating the people doing it, right? And so I think a lot of the marketing around that is great. And I think having different tracks of CPAs makes absolute sense. And it probably should have happened 20 years ago. But what I also think is that we need to start thinking about what's happening in the next 20 years, not what's happening in the last 20 years. And so from that perspective, I think it's a reactive approach versus a proactive approach. Now, are we going to get more people out of school taking the exam, really wanting to be CPAs by doing this? Maybe a few. I don't think it's going to have a revolutionary impact on the trajectory of our profession. What I think will make the difference is when firms realize that the way they're treating their team members, that the way that the people coming out of school want to have their careers go is completely different from what they're doing. That's the moment we'll see a giant revolution in the trajectory of the firms.
The AICPA thinks the CPA should be a license to do public accounting. That's the way they look at it. Are you familiar? You're up on that, I assume.
Sure. Right? But it's also how do you define public accounting?
We ought to go down there. We ought to go to New York and march on that building. what I'm concerned about is that the number of people is dropping tremendously. And whether we'll become extinct. We'll be extinct. And the AICPA is not really marketing the thing. They're interested, really. Unfortunately, there's someone at the AICPA whose name I won't mention. He believes that the purpose of getting the CPA is to do public accounting. That's it, right? Now, of course, they've said, but we want you to go into other areas, right? Advisory services, all right? But the thing that I see, unless there's other states that are different, that most of the people, all right, think they're going to go through this new exam starting in 24, all right? They're going to have an option of what they want to do, all right? And you know what? They don't even have to get experience in public accounting, all right? But that's not really what they're doing, are they? Are you familiar with that? What are they doing? Do you go to those meetings on this evolution?
I haven't actually attended the meetings. I've read quite a bit around the thought process going into it, but I don't know the practical. Like, I don't know what it'll look like for an individual graduating from school.
What the way it sounds, all right, because there's one person there, all right, there's not a lot of CPAs at the AICPA examination division, all right? There are a lot of non-CPAs, and these people are making decisions. Because I remember when I got certified, the people at the New York office of the AICPA were CPAs. Mm-hmm. All right. And that to me is a disgrace, but that's another story. The other thing is this, all right. Most people don't want to go into public accounting. They want more quality of life. That's the generation. All right. So what are they doing? They're convincing you that you're going to have all these choices, consulting, tax compliance. All right. But to get your license, you're going to still need the same experience requirement as it is to get into public accounting. All right. And no one sees that. In fact, I go to these meetings and they have these approved course providers now.
Sure.
But I listen to them and they say the same thing. Oh, well, no, we're going to give people a choice. If you want to go into consulting, all right, you can do that. All right. But I asked at one meeting before the pandemic, I said, but wait a minute, what's the experience requirement? And they said the same as it'll be before. Mm-hmm. Now, I think in a lot of cases, people don't want to go into public accounting. Mm-hmm. All right. You're forcing them. All right. What's wrong with them going, you know, working in accounting maybe, or not even. All right. And I guess the classic one is the federal government. When I was first teaching CPA review, we had a lot of people from the federal government because the experience requirement was you had to work in accounting for mm-hmm. 2 years, not public accounting. All right. And also there's someone who is right on our rear looking at us. Mm-hmm. That's the IMA. Mm-hmm. You have a lot of CMAs in your firm?
We don't actually. I was just looking at this statistic. Actually, we have 9 CPAs on our team. I think we have 1 CGMA. We don't have any CMAs, and the rest of our team is accountants that grew up in internal accounting.
So the IMA saw an opening a few years ago, and because they didn't have a tremendous increase in number of people going for it. Mm-hmm. But in foreign countries, you know, China, India, mm-hmm. all right, they don't care what you're certified in, as right. long as you have some type of U.S. certification. Mm-hmm. So the IMA doesn't require 150 hours.
Right.
All right. I don't know what their experience requirement is, but they've had a tremendous growth in the foreign markets.
Okay? Oh, I'm sure.
And also here in the U.S. Mm-hmm. All right. And I remember going to these meetings and I'm sitting there and they used to let the IMA come in and listen to everything we were doing. All right. For the CPA. Mm-hmm. All right. And I remember I said something like, you know, now I don't teach CMA, but I said, why are we letting the IMA come in here and hear everything that we're not doing or doing? All right. Well, I basically got booed out of that meeting. Okay. But, you know, I'm realistic. Hey, getting the CPA, yeah, CPA, it's a business. That's what it is.
Right.
It's a business, right? All right.
Well, and I mean, they have to change the legislation at each state level as well, right? What,
you're absolutely right. And that's going to be tough to do, isn't it?
Oh, extremely tough. I mean, states like Arizona, for example, it took, I think High Rock was the first firm that registered with a name that was not last names. And there was nothing in their statutes that said we couldn't do that. And it took them 6 months to approve it because they had to go to multiple board meetings and say, okay, why did this get declined? And the first one was it got declined because it wasn't last names. And then I came back with a letter and I said, there's nothing in your statutes that says you can't have a name that doesn't have your last names in it. And they were like, oh, well, do we have to change the statute? Do we need to change the law to be, you know, this, and then, you know, had to go to the board again and say, nope, you shouldn't change it. This is the wave of the future. You don't have to have the last name. People can still look you up and under your CPA license on your website. It's not, anyways, we got it across the board, but that was only a few years ago. That was in 2013, the beginning of 2014.
Right, right.
And so, you know, when you're looking at states, and Arizona is relatively progressive in terms of CPA licensing type statutes. And so when you look at it across the board.
What's the statute for experience?
Yeah, so right now they have you need 150 credit hours, and then you still need 1,000 hours under a licensed CPA, I believe is the latest, but I haven't looked at it in a few years. The last one I signed off on was about 3 years ago.
Are you having a problem getting CPAs? You having a problem getting accountants in your firm?
So yes and no. So yes, from the feeder perspective. So out of school, many people come to our firm because they don't want the billable hour lifestyle and they don't want that big firm mentality. And so they come here as an alternative in that we still are a public accounting firm. They could still get their CPA license if they choose to. But at the end of the day, many of them are looking at the directors we have on our team saying, why would I get my CPA license? It's a whole lot of work. It's a whole lot of money. It's not going to boost my career unless I want to go sign tax returns or sign audit reports. And so many of them are choosing not to pursue that after starting here and instead pursuing, you know, technology type things or going back for their master's and using their funds in a different way. And it's interesting to me because I still am a proponent of getting your CPA. I think that that's actually good. And quite frankly, at the end of the day, if the economy explodes, CPAs are going to be the last ones fired. We're going to have the most job security. And I think from, you know, a professional perspective, if you have the ability to do it, do it. But even with me encouraging these kids, it's, you know, probably 50% of them don't do it anyways. And then, you know, in general, the labor economy is just kind of a nightmare at the moment when we've seen what 21% increase in the quits rate from January 2020 to January 2022. Our profession's grown almost 10% in the last year. All of that is leading to just not enough talent. And when you don't have enough talent, the labor pool starts to dictate the terms. And so for us, we like to have our management level have CPA licenses, but they don't have to. They can have equivalent experience in industry and be good enough to manage a team or sometimes even better. And a lot of times they're amazing advisors. We have a few people on our team who are heading industries that grew up in like liberal arts programs and then, you know, ended up working at companies and ended up being their accountant and learned they were really good at it and figured out how businesses work and provide a ton of value to their clients. And they've never even once thought about what a CPA license would mean to them. So it's, I think it's really interesting when you're outside the realm of audit, what that means and how you can encourage people to actually value that license.
I think a lot of people don't know what a CPA does.
Exactly.
Right? Mm-hmm. And who should be out there telling everybody?
We have a branding problem. We absolutely have a branding problem. And I, you know, it's interesting because there are moments when we work with clients and they go, oh, you're a CPA firm? Can you do my taxes then? And it's like, I mean, yes, we do have a team that does taxes internally, but also that's only about 8% of our overall business. That's a tiny piece of what we do. And so it's very interesting when you're talking to business owners and you're working with the mid-sized locally owned companies that their perception of a CPA is, oh, you do taxes. And then, you know, occasionally they'll be like, oh, can you sign an audit report? Right. And we don't do audits. We don't do any assurance. There's so much risk. There's no profit and there's no point to us to do that when we can just partner with an audit firm down the street. And it's way easier for us with much less insurance and overhead, to be frank. And so like it's a giant branding problem. And I think the branding problem starts at the fact that the profession itself doesn't know how to identify itself. We're going through an identity crisis and we have been for the last 15 years. And I don't think that there is a entity, a firm, a state, I don't think there's anything very specific that can come out and fix this problem until the profession as a whole accepts what a CPA will mean for the next 20 years.
Who's going to do that? I mean, just who's going to be out there? Is it our responsibility to tell people what a CPA does? Or should we just say, whatever we say is not going to make a difference? What you feeling about that?
Well, I'm definitely never a person who believes that something I say won't make a difference. I always believe I can make a difference. And I always believe every individual should have a say. And I also believe that we should be advocating with the groups that do have the power to do that. We should be advocating with the AICPA. We should be advocating with our state boards. We should be talking to people about changing the laws to make a CPA mean more. And I think that, you know, that starts with probably my generation, those in the middle of our careers that have grown up up in this profession, we've seen the change. We understand what it was historically to be a CPA, but we also understand what it means today and the fact that it's the value of it has been taken out. And I do think that, you know, the AICPA with their evolution is trying to make a difference and trying to see what this could look like. I also think it's very reactive and too late. And so, you know, it's hard because you see the back half of the profession almost catching up to believe there needs to be a change. And then you have the front half of the profession screaming and yelling and kicking, saying this isn't enough. And the compromise that we've come to is mediocre at best. And so whose responsibility is it? I think it's every individual's responsibility that is a CPA or cares about this profession. I also think it's every, you know, body, every governing body, every membership organization, every state board. I think everybody involved from the bottom to the top and across the board from you know, coast to coast should be kicking and screaming and yelling to have this license mean something more and be more valuable. Because without that, we don't have a profession that's sustainable.
You think we're going to become extinct?
No.
You see that coming?
I don't think we'll become extinct. I think that we will evolve. I think that our presence may significantly decrease if our evolution is not pushed forward in a way that encompasses what's actually coming. I think that we have big lobbying boards trying to keep the regulations around audits and reviews the same as they've always been. And so I think that that'll stunt the evolution of technology in that area in a very, very inconvenient way, to be honest. And I think that we need to change the mindset to say, okay, we need to be the ones changing those laws so that we can utilize this technology so that our profession can evolve and can move out of this identity crisis into what we should be in the future, which in my opinion is holistic business advisors. You cannot understand a business without fundamentally understanding the accounting. It's the lifeblood. It's the circulatory system of the business world. And we need that knowledge to be passed on and we need that knowledge to grow and become better. And we also needed to be facilitated by technology. And so when you have these people advocating for these laws that were made 50 years ago around how audits need to happen, it's creating a roadblock that's extremely, it's just causing such a problem when you think about how to actually evolve in the future. And so to me personally, if we remove that roadblock, we take away that audits need people in the way that they need them, you add in technology, you add in the AI automation, you add in blockchain technology, you build general ledger systems that are, you know, checked on both sides and distributed, and you have a level of understanding of that technology and what it actually means, and the security that it provides, and you start at the SEC level and you push it down, when that happens, our profession will be free to actually be the advisors that we're capable of being.
I don't see that happening during my lifetime. I don't know.
Well, I think that it's definitely hard. I think that it is not something that people are talking about enough. I think that it is, and quite frankly, I think it's not something that most people understand in our profession. They're not really thinking about how the regulations are impacting the identity of CPAs and what that means from the perspective of actually creating a pipeline of talent.
Well, I write on LinkedIn and constantly saying, hey, we got to do something.
Thank you.
All I get from people on LinkedIn is, you know, to some extent, you're a complainer.
Yeah, you know, what is it? The squeaky wheel gets the attention, right?
Yes.
And so, you know, I can't say that there's an easy path forward for our profession. I know we won't die because we have changed before. The CPA profession has pivoted and has evolved and has created more value to the business community and has impacted the economy overall in other generations. And I think that our generation, my generation, is capable of pushing this forward in a meaningful way.
What'd you say? My generation? And you sort of looked at me and I said, I think she thinks I'm ready to go off to the...
That's not what I think at all.
You know, we ought to do a movie. I'm really thinking about talking to Spielberg about this. Jurassic CPA.
That would be great. If my grandfather was still alive, he would probably volunteer to star in that because he was an amazing CPA and taught me a lot of what I know about client service, and also was a giant supporter and proponent of what the CPA should mean in the future.
And as you said, you have no regret whatsoever that you took the CPA exam.
Absolutely not. I mean, it was brutal. It was hard. I passed three of them the first time. The fourth one, I failed the first time I took it because I had the flu and I was throwing up into the trash can under the desk as I was taking the exam. And I didn't even get to after the multiple choice, they have the simulations. Yeah. So I only got through one of them. So I didn't even finish the test and I got a 72. I was so mad.
Oh, gee.
Yeah. It was the worst. It was the worst. I was like, if you gave me a 50, I wouldn't have been so mad. I would have been like, yeah, that lines up. But I had a 72 and I didn't finish the test. And so I went back a month later and got in like 90 something, which was stupid. And I got mad at myself for overstudying because all you need is a 75. Right. But
are you one of the top 100 influential people in accounting?
Probably not.
I'm voting for you.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. But I also think that many of those lists are BS. I think they're popularity contests. I think that they are dependent on how involved you are with different membership organizations at different levels. And I think those of us, I feel like you're a kindred spirit in this way, those of us that speak loudly, those of us that come out with strong opinions, and those of us who push things forward in a direction that isn't the same as the herd is going, are not necessarily welcomed in those areas. And I also think that we're vital to the future of this profession.
Well, I had this gentleman on a couple of weeks ago, and he's in the top 100 accountants, most influential, you know. And I said to him, I said, how come I never get voted for this? You know, is it a grassroots thing? And by the way, what is the award you get? You get, a set of pencils or pens or a car. I wanted to get a car. Trip to Hawaii, maybe. All right. But he said to me, and you know, I talk to you. He said, I'm going to nominate you. All right.
That's
I said, no problem.
I'm pretty sure you also have to write essays. So
I don't know what they do. It's, you know, the people who win are win. It sounds like a contest, but now I'll just go as one of the top 100 over 60, 65.
Would you
believe
65?
I'm going to be 77, April 24th.
That's unbelievable. I don't believe you.
I swear.
That.
And yeah, I mean, I've been very lucky. Thank God I have a cosmetic surgeon on a payroll, but I keep myself young because I joke around. I kid around, you know, with people. And it's not that they say, Phil, are you ever serious? No, but I just like that. In fact, I think I would have been very good in some form of show business it's interesting you say that about marketing. I got out of accounting and I thought to myself, you know, I'd like to go into marketing. And I started interviewing, and the search firm said, oh, you have a degree in accounting? Oh, it's easier. Forget about that marketing. It's a bad idea.
Yeah. Yep. No, it's interesting for sure. I had a dream as a child to be on Saturday Night Live. That was like my goal as a kid. And so one of my good friends was actually working at NBC's data center. And he was archiving all of the old Saturday Night Live shows. And so he called me when I was in New York and he said, hey, come down to the building. And I was like, okay. So I show up, I'm like, what are we doing? Like thinking we were going to dinner or something. And he was like, no, come up. So he pulls me up, he pulls me on stage on the Saturday Night Live stage in between, you know, when they were recording. And he was like, here you go, open mic night. You're on Saturday Night Live. It was fantastic.
And who was the guest host? Do you remember?
Well, it wasn't actually while they were recording. It was just the stage. I got to play on the set.
No,
I got to play on the set.
Actually, I decided what I'd like to do now is, you know, I give back to the profession, you know, and what the way I do it is I started contributing, and I got to meet a lot of people at NBC, believe it or not,
cool,
in the news division. So we were supposed to go next week and supposed to see Hoda Kotb.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, I've met her about 4 or 5 times. Nice
yeah.
woman.
Yeah.
And I just really like, I like the fact that I go in there and they're normal people.
Yep.
All right. And they actually laugh at what I say. I mean, now I have a problem, maybe a hearing problem they have, but no, they think I'm Willie Geist. I don't know if you know who he is. Willie mm-hmm. Geist. He asked my wife last time I was there. He says, "Is Phil always like this?" And but no, I enjoy doing that. I've met a lot. Susan Lucci I met from All My Children, and you know, it was interesting. And if I had anything to do, I would have liked to have gone into that area. But you know, it wasn't
never
the right
too late.
Time, unfortunately. But you know what? I'm glad I do what I do because I get to meet nice people like you.
Yeah, it was fantastic chatting with you.
I want to ask you one last question. All
Please.
Right. You are on the National Zero Ambassador. All right. Mm-hmm. Tell us what that is, if you would.
Sure. So Zero is a general ledger program working with small businesses all over the world. And what I do as a national ambassador is I work with them on their content. I work with their sales team to give them an insight into what it's like to be a professional in this profession. I help advise their product teams in what features we need next. And I talk to them about what the potential is of technology automation in the small business arena and how they can actually innovate and utilize that and partner with accountants to get that further out into the communities. And so for me, it's a platform to be able to create change inside of the profession through a different avenue, and that avenue being a tech company.
Where are they out of? San Francisco?
Zero? Their international headquarters is actually in New Zealand, where they were founded,
really?
Of all places. Yeah, okay. But their U.S. headquarters is in Denver. They were in San Francisco, but they moved maybe 5 or 6 years ago.
Do you live in, I lived in Denver for 6 years.
It's beautiful.
Great
I'm going
place.
Next week.
Are you going next week?
Yep.
You're not going for skiing, obviously.
No, not for skiing. I'm actually going for the Zero go-to-market kickoff.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have a wedding in June. My great niece is getting married.
Wow, and, congratulations.
Yeah, Denver, you know, it's gotten very crowded, but great place to live. I can't complain.
Yeah, it's gorgeous.
And my daughter grew up there, so.
Amazing.
So is there any other words of wisdom you want to share with me, all right, as far as recommending to someone, all right, when it comes to picking a major, what would you pick, all right? Would you still pick CPA, or what else would you recommend, all right? For someone who's very outgoing, all right, what would you recommend as far as a business area?
So when I'm talking to students, the first thing I ask them is, what do you want your life to look like? And most of them have no idea. They have absolutely no idea. Or they answer very similar to the lives of their parents if they grew up in a nice household. And the opposite of their parents if they grew up in a not so nice household. And it's very interesting at that age to have them go through that kind of existential thought process of what do I actually want out of life? What are my goals? And I think that many of them are coming to the table with goals that are different than I want to work at the same company for 40 years. Many of them are coming to the table with this idea that I can make a difference in my community somehow, right? And then it's about aligning that to a profession that makes sense to them. So from my perspective, I still think accounting is a very solid degree. I think many universities are changing their programs to incorporate technology in good ways. I think that they're thinking about what it will be like to be an accountant in the future versus in the past. Not all of them, but many of the programs are. And I would encourage students, if they're heading into an accounting program, to look for programs that are future oriented, that are technology oriented. I would also say, take a lot of statistics classes. I think that understanding underlying data and statistics is foundational to being successful in business moving forward. I would tell them to go take a data analytics course if their college offers it, or go take a basic computer science course, understand programming language and understand how to interact with it, because it will be part of your job moving forward. And I think, you know, if they're able to garner those types of electives during their college careers and come out as an accountant, they can be part of this wave to change what a CPA means. And they can be part of this coming to the table with the idea that we can be holistic business advisors, and we don't have to just be the commodity of signing an audit report, and they don't have to go sit in a count room counting securities, you know, for days on end. Well, because,
no, I'm just kidding, just...
because it's boring, to be honest, right? And I think paying your dues is a thing of the past. I think that, you know, we'll see a front level of technology start to take up the work that otherwise we would have had human capital doing. And I think that that's actually for everyone's benefit, because they can start to use their brains. And so encouraging students to think about critical thinking skills and think about, you know, how you can actually garner the skills while you're in college to be successful in this career long term. If they have those thought processes, I say, go ahead, do accounting. It'll be good for you, especially if you can come out and like come work with us at High Rock, because we're awesome, or find other like-minded people.
Shop, actually. You know, that sounds like a soda company.
I mean, that's awesome. I like soda. So do you like soda?
Do I like soda? At least you don't say pop. That used to bother me in Denver. They used to say, you want some pop? And I say, what's pop?
You know, yeah.
But it's funny. You know, you are, I mean, this is my impression of you, even though it's not, I'm sure it's not the most important thing in the world to you, but it, I'll tell you something, you're very bright.
Thank you.
And someone to start a firm, you know, like you did, that amazes me. It really does.
I appreciate that.
I would almost, I mean, I can't imagine you're very young. What do you have, two children, you said?
I have one. He's five.
Five. Mm-hmm. How is the five-year-old?
Oh my gosh, he's amazing. He is a smart, very sassy little guy who is incredibly athletic and does not stop moving and jumping and hitting his head on things. So I'm having a lot of fun with it. Keeping him alive is a chore, but it's also really fun to have conversations with him.
That's great. And I'm sorry, you have, what's your siblings you were saying?
My sister has two kids as well, a five-year-old and a three-year-old.
Well, all I can do, Liz, is wish you the best.
Thank you.
You know, have a good trip next week.
I appreciate that.
And I enjoyed talking. I really did.
You know, as well.
It was interesting.
Yeah, anytime you want to chat, let me know. I've never met
someone who's 18 years old and knows as much as you do.
I wish I was 18. I definitely would.
How about 19? We'll take 19.
Well,
Liz, thank you very much.
Thank you.
I was going to say, if I get to, you know, I've never been to actually Tahoe, but I guess if I get there, you never know, you know, I'm going to use the old telephone. Remember that telephone?
Yeah. Yep. I have one.
But anyway, no, I think you're a terrific person. And I think this profession needs more people like you.
Thank you. I appreciate
because
that.
Because if we don't get more people like you, I'm concerned about the certification. I really am. By the way, what is that thing you're holding there on the desk? The orange. Is that orange?
That's orange. This thing right here?
Yeah, what is that?
Oh, that's my microphone.
Oh. Oh, very good.
Yeah.
Do you walk around like this all day? 50? No. No, that's
not quite.
Is this your office? I'm just curious.
Yep.
Is this your office?
Yep, very this nice. Is my very office. Nice. Thank you.
All right. Well, once again, safe travels next week.
Appreciate that.
I want to thank Liz for being on the podcast. And what I try to do every week is to bring someone on that's, you know, has a different type of information or information to share with you, whether you're a CPA candidate, you're not a candidate, but you got to, you know, this is the only way you're going to find out what you might want to do. Although I'm still trying to find out what I should have done. All right. But you know what? I didn't want to be an accountant. I always tell people that I don't want to be an accountant, but I'll tell you, I am glad I did because as I said, I've met a lot of interesting people like Liz. I mean, I can't ask for anything more than that, really. So anyway, Liz, take care. Thanks a lot for your time. I appreciate it tremendously. And this is Phil Yeager, and this is my podcast, CPA Review and More. And next week, we'll have another lively discussion. Who knows what it is? I don't know. They don't tell me anything. It's a surprise on my part. But anyway, we'll have a guest. And if you want a particular area for us to find a guest, all right, just pick up the phone. I'll give you my phone number. I always do. It's in Maryland. I'm on area code 301-315-0888. 301-315-0888. Love to talk to you. You have any questions about anything? Give me a call. Thank you, everyone. And I wish you all the best. And if you're studying for the exam, good luck on the CPA exam.
Goodbye.
Take care, everyone. This is Phil Yeager. We'll see you again soon. Be nice to people.